Or, like, I mean, the wording, too. There was a specific term that we made up, and we thought it was, like, made
sense. We thought it was cool.
Yeah. We're like, this is fun.
This is a great word. And people are like...
Not one person who tested it could guess accurately what it would mean. Yeah. So we're like, okay, that's maybe bad wording.
Hi, Audrey.
Hi, Adam. And hi, Allie.
Hi.
Wow, you got a real voice for radio of like...
I thought welcome. I'd keep it sultry.
Yeah. Ooh. So, Allie, we usually start these things off by like asking us, or asking our guests, excuse me, not ourselves, a little bit about how they got to where they are today. So, like, well, who are you? What do you do?
Yeah.
I like I thought you meant from like, you know, how did I get to work?
Yeah.
Well, first I put on clothes and then
I start my day. Ovaltine.
All these infomercial plugs, I guess.
Yes.
No, but I also like to say, because I think it's funny, who are you and why are you here? And then answer Adam's question of...
I didn't realize you did that every time, so that shows you how much I'm paying attention to what you say.
Bruh.
I don't know who I am.
It's my favorite. I like secretly came up with it and have been doing it the whole time, I think. But apparently Adam really just...
Yeah, covert.
Hates me.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
So who
but
am I?
But I like Adam's question, too. Yeah. It's a good one, so...
How did I end up here is the final question.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, my name is Allie Schreggy. I'm the user support manager at Configura. Why am I here? Well, Audrey and Adam asked me to be here to speak to support and our initiatives and all of the great things that have to do with what we're trying to do here. And how did I get here? Well, I just have been in support for most of my career, and I really enjoy helping people. I enjoy the technical side of things like computers and why they do what they do. And this has been like an interesting kind of challenge of why does the computer program do what it does? So that's been really, really interesting. I've learned quite a bit and I continue to learn. And that's why I love working here.
Yeah. And we went on a visit last week. Allie and I and some other amazing people went to a dealership and it was really good.
You were a great Audrey.
Oh, whoops. Did I accidentally fish for a compliment?
Did I plug myself?
No. I just missed the T on it and I just used the I. It's been an interesting day. But no, it was great to have you there. I think it was good for you too to kind of like see the users in action and not just on the chats and getting like those little snippets. But it was also, I think, great for the users and just having your expertise with the IT stuff. And it was great. I was glad you were there. And we had fun at the state fair, which is really what it's all about.
Everything on a stick.
Yeah.
What could you ask for?
Tell us about some of the things support has been working on this year.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wait. No, first. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, the questionnaire. This is Audrey's segment. And I think she has yet to actually do it after the first episode without being reminded.
Without being reminded. Okay, so we do like a rapid fire questionnaire thing. So,
you weren't prepared for these on purpose. So.
Good.
Yeah, you got to be on the spot. Loosen you up a little bit. So, okay, for breakfast, sweet or savory?
Savory.
City trip or nature escape?
Nature escape.
Brainstorm with a team or solo thinking?
Brainstorm with the team.
Favorite childhood cartoon?
Scooby-Doo.
And go-to emoji?
Oh, the laughing cry face.
That's a good one. That's a good one. Solid, multi-purpose. Good, good, good. Okay, well, that's that. I did it.
So, yeah, the real reason that you were invited on this podcast, and I don't even know if you feel like you were voluntold, because I think your boss happens to, he might be in the room with you right now.
He is also the
worst.
I
can still hear his voice.
Well, we kicked off this year with wanting to do some improvements for our users from the support team a little bit, right? And that was based on just interest that we had in just making things better. So out of curiosity, how do you feel like that went? What did you do? How'd you get here?
Yeah. Well, when we started the initiative, we weren't kind of sure how to tackle it. It seemed like a really big problem, solution, you know.
Fish to fry, you might say.
Fish to fry. Perfect word. Thank you, Audrey. I always am fishing for words. but it just, we didn't know how we could segment it out, and we didn't know kind of where to start. So we started to do interviews, and I actually did those with Audrey, just because she's, you have no memory of this, do you?
Did I do any of the interviews with you? I thought you two actually did them.
I'm pretty sure we actually did do the
interviews. Oh, did we?
Yeah, it was you and I.
Oh,
there's a couple that you
did. I know I'm always in your heart, so.
You know what? I did superimpose Audrey's face over yours.
I can understand how that happens. Face. We have very similar body types.
Exactly.
Well, and also just, I can understand why you would want to see my face instead of Adam's.
That also makes sense.
Like.
It happens all the time in my brain, at least.
Lauren makes her tell you all day that she'd rather see Audrey's face.
So. Oh.
I mean, we are married, so.
Well, I did do those interviews with Adam. Now that my memory has returned to me, and we just learned a lot. We tried to keep bias out of the conversation. So we just asked a few individuals, like, what's your experience? Like, are you satisfied with the support that you're getting? Is there things that you would want to see changed? And we just got a lot of good feedback, and sometimes even not by the things that they were directly sharing in response to those questions. It was just kind of by action, by hearing their days, their anecdotes. So that was a really great way of starting this out. And then we went from that and had these internal sessions where we tried to determine, okay, what do we think is the problem with that knowledge, with all of this information we got from the people that we interviewed? And is there things that maybe we're having struggles with internally that we could better refine? And we pulled up a lot of good kind of different things that were problematic, I think, or could be improved. Maybe they're not totally bad, but they had caused us to be inefficient or unhappy as a support team in some way.
Allie, it's so funny how you're describing this. Because it's almost like you're hitting these phases of design thinking.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
With empathizing and then defining the problem. So doing the interviews, hearing your users, learning about their pains and everything, and then defining, like, from that, what can we narrow down the issue to? So we've gotten to those two so far. It's crazy. I wonder if we'll get through the other phases too.
You know what? You're keeping me on my toes. I'm not entirely sure what the other phases are.
Oh, but I'll tell you.
I'm excited to find out.
If it comes up.
Well, during this process, Audrey came in to help.
Oh, little old me?
Yeah, little old you. And it was a combined effort of Adam sort of joining in into the fray. He wasn't really, I wouldn't say he was the key person who moved the items, kind of moved it along.
You're just not that important.
No, yeah, I'm really not at all.
But it was a group effort. We brought in quite a few of our support team members who had been there for quite some time, from different regions. So we tried to find some regional differences there. And then
I think I actually had a family emergency when we did this particular process, and I was actually not involved very much.
Yes. He was in the first phase or like the first,
I was in the first workshop that we did.
I don't remember that it was a family emergency.
It was, yeah.
Oh, okay. We'll talk about that later.
Yeah. But it was kind of through that transition of going to the group and saying, okay, brainstorming with the team, as I mentioned before.
Sort of ideating on
that. Ideating, yeah. And through that, with addition of some other team members, so people who weren't on the support team but played a part in the process overall, it was great to find out, you know, what their key pain points were as well. So through that, we workshopped, we went through kind of narrowing down what we thought the problem statements were. So things that we wanted to tackle, I guess the goals that we had for the initiative. And then Audrey led us through this wonderful phase of sort of like creating these different solutions. And they didn't have to be things that were, I guess, realistic, I guess, in that sense. We didn't actually have to create these things. We just had to think about them, design them. And we came up with this great prototype with the combination of all of those design ideas. And after we did that, that's when Audrey and I went through the prototype interviews where mm-hmm. we had individuals test this prototype.
So your memory wasn't completely broken.
Yeah. I just didn't remember the time. but that prototyping session was also incredibly enlightening. Like having something that we could show to our users and having them play around with it and say, yeah, I really like this solution you created. It was great to see that feedback and then say, oh, okay, we're on the right track. If this is something that we want to do, they're definitely receptive to that. And I really enjoyed it. I think that was, if we hadn't done that, I don't know where we'd be with this initiative. So I'm very happy we did it.
Yeah.
It was really fun. It was fun to do. Cause you know, with user experience, it is often related to user interface, say UI, UX. But this really was more focused on just the experience, like kind of the customer journey a little bit. And so we did do like designs of like, this is something, what if the help center looked like this? And you could interact like that. So there was a little bit of design, but it was just kind of rough, scrappy designs. And, so it was really fun. The team did a great job at the workshop. It's called a design sprint. And it's crazy because you actually did mention all the other design thinking phases.
Oh, wow.
Of ideating. That's why I suggested that word. And then prototyping and testing. So just making something fast and dirty and testing it out and then just kind of refining that as you get the test results from something that you didn't put too much time into. I think we spent a day or less making the prototype and then just test it quick. So we were able to, after basically with a day and a half of our time, get insights that would have taken forever if we tried to just build something mm-hmm. all the way and then just see how users think about it if they tell us later. Like, yeah, so it was great. It was really fun to be a part of. Thanks for letting me join.
Actually. Of course. Yeah. It took a lot of the guesswork out, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
Being able to do something quick like that. I think, like you said, if we were to build it and put all this time and resources into something that we thought would work, it just would have been a waste.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that we both kind of left those interviews with some learnings for sure, but just these giant buckets of information.
Yes.
Just like, what do we even do? Yeah. With all this? Mm-hmm. Like, there's so much information.
Between the interviews and the prototype, it was just like, I want to say information overload because it was just like, wow, I have learned so much. They like this. They hate this.
Yeah.
Like it was a lot to take back and then say, okay, if we went this direction, then we're on the right track. Then we already know that. And then it doesn't mean we can't test it again. We can't, you know, when we're actually doing this thing, we can actually test it with these folks. But it was just, you know, I think a motivation to continue forward was what we were thinking.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I found a couple of surprising things from the interview phase that I wanted to point out that I thought were interesting. And the biggest one that comes to mind when I think of something I found interesting is I kind of walked in with an expectation, which I know is not necessarily the best way to do things. But my expectation was that because we had asked people like, who's your favorite support person? And I won't name names, but I had a persona in my mind of what everyone was going to think was their favorite support person. And I haven't had a persona in my mind of what everyone's least favorite support person might look like. And it ended up being that people liked both people, both personas, mm-hmm. both ways of working. Like people liked the fast people and people also liked the people that really educated them and took time with them and stuff. And it just depended on the person, which one was their favorite, but it was almost universal that if they liked one personality, they disliked the other and vice versa.
Oh yeah. Really there was a dichotomy of personalities. And yeah.
Do you want to say who? Just kidding.
No way. No, and it is interesting to see how people interact with support and what they prefer. And it is harder to make a broader solution to the preference, right? Mm. I think kind of being able to offer different options, maybe it's not a personality, maybe it is like a resource, is another option that maybe that's the fast and dirty that they need, you know, to get the solution quickly. Mm-hmm. So we've been trying to think about that and see how we can accommodate that with the initiative.
Yeah. Is there anything that you found interesting from the research?
Me?
Either of you. Yeah, either of you, really.
I'm trying to like narrow down. I mean, I thought it was all really fun and interesting. I'm just trying to remember.
You're trying to remember when it happened, right? Like the timeline.
My memory is pretty horrible. No, but Allie, like maybe you want to answer and I'll try to think if I can think of something specific.
I think I sort of had an idea of the behavior regarding how the tickets, like how users looked at their tickets, how they responded to their tickets. And I guess it was surprising to see like how receptive they were when we had a different option, right? So they didn't have to rely on email. That was in our prototype, by the way. I forgot to mention that. So we tested a different way of viewing tickets and they were very receptive to it. And I guess it was very, I don't know, inspiring to me because I was like, oh, okay, maybe if we offer these different options, you know, people feel like they are getting the information they need and it's not in a way that is buried by their day-to-day work. You know, we know emails like that. Even my inbox is like, you know, you have one email and if you flag it, that's mm-hmm. the only way you can capture it before yeah. it gets buried beneath yeah. the fray. So I don't know. That was really cool to see and like cool to learn how people behave, mm-hmm. I guess. And that's something that, like, I know with UI UX, you're always like, you design something a certain way and how users interact with it is sometimes not what you expect. Mm-hmm. And I think I learned quite a bit of that mm-hmm. just through us prototyping that.
Yeah.
And then seeing, you know, people actually interact with it. And we thought something was super intuitive and it was not.
It's not. Yeah. Or like, I mean, the wording too, there was a specific term that we made up and we thought it was like made sense.
We thought
sense.
It was cool.
Yeah. We're like, this is fun.
This is a great word. And people are like,
not one person who tested it could guess accurately what it would mean. Yeah. So we're like, okay, that's maybe bad wording, which we weren't intending for it to be like the final, like, again, it's not polished or anything. So we were like, we'll probably, you know, like review the different terms that we use, but we're like, let's just use the one we made up right now. And yeah, that's important to recognize.
Yeah. I think people, you know, they look at things visually mm-hmm. and think like, okay, does that make sense? And then also like how you word it, obviously. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
we were trying our hardest, but yeah, I had never done that before, like a prototype process. So that was a great learning experience. And I learned quite a bit from our users just based on that.
I think one insight that I took away, which I think I mean, I did know this ahead of time, but it just was really confirmed and like deepened, was that people want to know they're heard and they want updates, even if it's not what they, you know, the answer that they wanted.
Yeah.
Like if you send in a feature request, I think some people maybe were, I don't remember, if, like some of them maybe were like, I just sent it in and that's fine. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. I think a lot of people are like, where did that go? What's happening with that? Are they working on it? Did they reject it? Like even if we reject it, they want to know and kind of learn why. Cause a lot of times if they know why, they're like, okay, I get that. Like that's a bummer. But just having the transparency of what's, you know, what information got to which people and what's been decided, if anything, and, you know, if we're going to work on it, when we might estimate mm-hmm. it'll happen or whatever. Just having that transparency and wanting the visibility to that information. So,
yeah.
That was one that I took away too. And I think that one's interesting because I was trying to describe this to Lauren the other day. There's a sort of like point where which like a ticket, even if it is like a legitimate bug, let's say every third Tuesday of the month at 3 a.m. if you happen to update, this text looks funny. And it turns out that after investigation, it's going to require us to rewrite the entire update system. I hate to break it to you. We're probably not going to do that just to fix that one issue that can seldomly come up. And that sort of like rejection feels bad from like a certain emotional standpoint for us because we care so much about our users and so much about their experience. But at the end of the day, I think everybody would rather we actually fix some other major issues than something like that.
Yeah, that everybody's running into all the time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those are the kinds of things we should be focusing on, right? And so like it was hard for me to accept that like I just have to tell them like I'm not going to do this. But we found that people actually would rather hear that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I know they were saying just knowing the why
is the important
part. Is important. And like you were saying earlier, like the feeling of being alone, I think that's a feeling that our users have. It's like this feeling of being powerless. And I mean, that is that commonly brings you to support, right? You're like, this is happening to me. I need to get through my day. I need to get this thing done. And you're powerless because something horrible or inconvenient has happened. And so like hearing from our users, if you have documented this in some way so I know I'm not alone, or you put something out there that says, hey, this is a known issue, even with or without a workaround, it just makes me feel like I'm not the only person experiencing it. Mm-hmm. This isn't a solo, oh, I did it type of thing, which I think a lot of our users feel like, oh, I did this to myself. Mm-hmm. It's not always the case.
No, often not.
No. It's just that, you know, the unfortunate combination of factors that brought them to that point. And it might be something that they are the only ones that have that combo, which is wild. But yes, that does happen. Mm-hmm. You know, how individual CETs are configured could be wildly different from each other, even in the same dealership. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
What's one thing from that initiative that you are working on implementing now?
Right now we're working on refining notifications. So every ticket action that we do, so whether it be when the ticket's created, when you're going through the back and forth comments, so like emails back and forth with a technician, we're looking to refine that to make it easier to follow, not feel spammy, I guess you could say. So we're trying to make that customizable if possible. And there's a couple of things that I do think are going to be very customizable. Obviously I think comments might not be, just because we do need to interact, and ask questions and follow up with certain actions. If, you know, we provided maybe a workaround, we want to make sure that it's working in case others are having that issue so we can share that to them. So that's one part of our initiative. We're doing a lot of background ticketing system refinement. So that makes us more efficient, when the technicians are working through our day-to-day queue work. And that being, you know, chats, calls, emails, feedback reports, we're trying to make us as efficient as possible so that we can go through those quickly. We understand, you know, what's happening. We're documenting it appropriately. And then if it is being escalated, let's say it's not, something that's just solved by a toggle, maybe, then we're making sure it's going to the developers with all the information that it needs to have to be corrected.
Yeah. As a dev myself, I've definitely seen like the outcome of like the process by which we send a ticket to a developer and how different it looks and how much better and cleaner it looks. I actually was able to increase my ability to look at tickets even by, I'd say, like 5 or 10 fold, how much faster I can go through a ticket now.
So since they've been making these changes, that's all?
It's actually been like super substantial, I think, from like the developer perspective already. So
that's great.
Yeah.
One thing that's really interesting that we discussed during the design sprint was this fact that there's two sort of different sides to support, and there's two different roads that we can work on improving. There's the user side, where the support is interacting with the user, learning their problems, communicating back with them. But then there's also the passing information on to the developers. And sometimes that involves going back and forth between the user and the developer and everything. But there's there's room for improvement in how we interact with users and support them and give them information. And there's room for improvement in how our internal processes. And so it's awesome that the like improvements to how we do tickets is sounds like it's kind of hitting both of those. Cause we sort of focused, I feel like in this sprint more on the user side, but we recognize we also really need to improve and look at the developer side too. They're really quite overlapping, but they're also two different beasts. There are two different fish that need to be fried.
Yes. And not on a stick.
Nerd Alert! Welcome to Nerd Alert, where Adam talks about nerdy things for 2 minutes. Today, our topic is, what does chaos mean in the mathematical sense of the word?
Yep.
Let me grab my timer.
That'd probably be helpful, yeah. Because I only get 2 minutes, folks.
You only get 2 minutes. If I don't set the timer, it will go on. And you will, like, yeah. All right, ready?
Yeah.
3, 2, 1, go.
So, especially in, like, the 90s, but even before then, there was this discovery of systems that would describe things getting kind of out of whack, for lack of a better term, or not being very, what's the word I'm looking for? Repeatable, understandable, mathematical in a way, because the system got so strange. The easiest example of chaos that I know of is actually double pendulum motion. So you have a pendulum that swings back and forth. You have a second pendulum attached to the first that also swings back and forth. If you try to define the motion of the second pendulum in the way that you would think, I'm not going to try to get too crazy on that part. In the way that
I
would think
of no way.
So like if you're just staring at it, you want to just like be able to plot it out like on a 2D graph or something. Like where's the position of this thing? If you started to try to do that, what you would uncover is pretty quickly that it gets insane and it's super difficult to understand where it's going to be at any particular point in time. It's considered a chaotic system because it doesn't really seem to follow any sort of easily definable rules. Typically, these sorts of equations have to be pulled out and actually like utilized in a deeper sense. Like they actually have equations for chaotic systems in some cases that don't have any definition other than the equation that it is. This is a J-type function of 2, 3 or something like that, because that's the best way we can come up with to describe it. And then you actually have to go look up the values yourself because you can't just pull your calculator out and type them in. This is something that like the values are so they're easily known because mathematicians spend lots and lots of time sitting around doing this kind of thing, pushing these buttons, recalculating these values, that sort of stuff. But in essence, that means that like every time you do that, you have to write down another value and another value and another value. So strange as it is, sometimes just calculating these things is something mathematicians do.
Three,
and one of our teams that's made better math is Team Chaos. So this is what they're about. Look at that.
That was pretty good.
Smooth ending.
Yeah, it was a very smooth ending.
Thank you.
I understood none of that.
Excellent.
And I was kind of nodding to like encourage you to continue.
I appreciated that because I actually thought I was doing a good job for a second.
I think
there.
You were, but I just like that's not a way my brain works. My brain was becoming very chaotic. So yeah. All right. Good job, Adam.
One of the things that I wanted to also talk about, since I know we're kind of running out of time, is what is like the day of an average support person like? Like, what is it like to work support? Because like, I think our users maybe even just don't even think about what it's like on the other end.
Yeah. Yeah. So I know quite a few of the support team will start their day by reviewing the tickets that they sent over on the previous day or ones that have been updated recently. So like a developer has responded or asked a question or something like that. So they'll go through that, what we call the backlog, and try to get through updating those and responding appropriately. Maybe it's relaying something to our users or relaying something back to the developer. And then it starts to pick up. So we do handle quite a bit of things through our ticket queue. And I would say the majority of what a support team member is working on is chats. Tackling the chats that come in, trying to provide real-time support. You know, sometimes we'll be able to remote in. Sometimes I know it's, there's like security settings and we can't remote in. There's all these different kind of little obstacles that come in the way as we're going through. But they're also trying to also focus on the emails that come through, the feedback reports, which aren't kind of demanding as much attention as a real time interaction would. But it's a lot of queue work, I guess you'd say. We are hopefully, it's hard not to, but hopefully not seeing everyone as another number in the line. I know that the team tries to, you know, keep their stress level low when having as many interactions in one day. If anybody's ever worked customer service, it is a bit stressful even when you're...
Can confirm.
Even when you're dealing with customers, and they're kind, and it's not a situation where someone's very stressed out and upset. So I know a lot of that comes into play, you know, managing the stress levels, interacting with the customers, talking people through really tough situations, talking people through, you know, a how-to, you know, describing something in a way that makes sense for everyone to understand.
Yeah.
I applaud them. I think people call them superheroes in that sense.
Absolutely. I feel like from my support days, calling back to what you said about people being kind, when I started on support, I kind of expected it to be a lot of like angry people. Cause when I think of like people calling into support or help centers or whatever, they're always just angry and mean is what kind of the stereotype I had. And I was really pleasantly surprised that like most people are not. They're actually like quite kind and they may be super stressed.
Yeah.
And like angry in general, but not at the person on chat usually, which is really great. But I think there's still that element of like the draining nature of customer support because of that empathy, like nonstop. Just facing like some of the most difficult things our users are dealing with. So for me, it was really good that I had the training side along with support and that I got to go to like, you know, at that point it was called the user conference, but experience, because those were like, those experiences reminded me, oh yeah. Okay. People don't all just hate us, but sometimes when you're sitting on support and you just see the rough sides, it's hard to kind of keep that in mind.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I would say that support, you know, the nature of the job is dealing with some of the negativity.
Yeah.
And it's not because the users are incredibly negative. It's just the situation, of course, is negative.
Yeah.
It's not a good, you know, when you encounter a bug or a glitch, it's not a good experience unless it makes you laugh. I mean, there are some funny glitches I've seen.
Yeah. One of my personal favorites is actually the Configura bug. There was a broken web page and it took you to comfigura.com, which is a domain that somebody internally had bought and put Eric Hinkle's face on.
Yes, it was
funny. It's quite funny. I advise checking it out. It's full of goofiness.
Yeah. And see how many times you can get your coworkers to click on it, when they're not supposed to.
We've had also a situation where a symbol comes in as gigantic, larger than the actual office space. And it just is this hulking shadow over all of the other symbols and office accessories. So we just laughed. There was like a chair that we were like, oh, a giant should sit there. But they sent us a screenshot, you know, we do have to laugh. And I hope, I know it's not funny in the moment, maybe for the person experiencing it, but it is.
That's how we got to get through the day.
Yeah, we got to find the humor.
It just is, it's incredible because the shadow was so you know, perfect. Like it did all the lighting correctly. So you just have this giant chair looming over the office.
That's amazing. The most realistic giant chair that doesn't exist.
Yeah. I wanted to render it. I was really hoping to put that up, maybe enter it for the awards.
Oh yeah. That'd be good. I love it.
One last thing I wanted to throw out there because we have an opportunity here. Because you're going to be talking at Experience, Audrey brought up Experience. What are you talking about?
Oh, yeah. So, I'm doing a joint session with Megan Hartman from H&I. And we're talking about troubleshooting with CT and how to submit a great bug report. And we're having a lot of fun, trading secrets, I guess. Maybe not secrets, but trading tricks, I guess. And I'm learning quite a bit from Megan and her from I, and I don't know. It's been great. I hope people come to check it out. You know, if you want to learn how to troubleshoot CTA, and have some tips and tricks to kind of get through those kind of weird issues. I hope that our session will get you to that state.
And what's one thing that's going to be kind of unique or funny about your session, maybe?
Oh,
without going into detail, but just a little teaser.
Both Megan and I have a great sense of humor, I would say. So we have been trying to make it as entertaining as possible. And I hope you can see that if you attend the session, that we're trying to make it lighthearted. We want to keep your attention. I know sessions sometimes can be a lot of info. So we're hoping to keep you motivated, keep you entertained, but also teach you. So
I love it. I love a little mix of goofy and educational at the same time, which hopefully is what our podcast is.
I hope so.
That's what we
keep getting feedback for, at least.
Yeah.
Okay, so one last question, and I lied because I got to squeeze in one more, and then I got to sign off. So the real last question is usually if you could have anybody in the podcast. Doesn't matter if it's ridiculous, the living, dead, or actually like helpful for the podcast. We don't really care. Who would you pick?
Ooh, that's a good question. And it's not one I can give you rapid fire.
Well, you've got 3 minutes. So.
Okay, Barack Obama.
Ooh, perfect. Okay.
Yeah. You know, he's got a voice for radio. Holy cow.
He does. No matter what you think of him, he's got a good
man
voice.
Man can talk.
Yeah.
Man can talk.
Yeah. Iconic voice.
He could convince me of anything.
Yeah. If we were going more for a voice for radio, Casey Kasem.
Ooh, that's true. Casey Kasem's pretty classic. And you know who that is?
Of course I do.
Yeah. Question marks over her head.
Radio-ish person.
Yeah. Didn't you do the voice of Norville Roberts?
Yep, he did.
Shaggy.
Yep.
Oh,
Scooby-Doo. So Scooby-Doo throwback to what I had previously said. Ooh, but also, he did a radio top 40 for many years.
Yeah, very famous guy.
Well, I need to brush up on my radio personalities. But
you do, yeah.
In the meantime, good job, Allie.
Oh, thank you.
Good job, Adam.
Good job, Audrey.
And that's all for today.
See you next time.
Thanks for being here, Allie.
Thank you, guys.
Bye.